This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, it appears to be a week of perfect storms, both meteorologically and politically.
That's right, and that is the perfect metaphor, because in the world of weather and politics, it's been a winter. First, Hurricane Sandy battered the East Coast this week, and now, of course, the final few days of the presidential campaign looks to be a wild and stormy ride as well.
Well, Sandy has certainly wreaked havoc all over the East Coast and also into the Midwest. It's also had a profound impact on the campaign schedules. A number of those states are right in the pathway.
And in all of those states, we want to give a shout out to the incredible emergency response teams and the folks who kept roads cleared, people in their neighborhoods who watched out for each other, all around a great humanitarian outpouring of help for people.
Our thoughts and prayers are with all of those who have been impacted, and thanks to those who are helping. Our guest today has been a thought leader in using technology to help improve the patient experience. Dr. Molly Coy is the Chief Innovation Officer of the Institute for Innovation in Health at UCLA Health Systems.
Dr. Coy is also the founder of the Health Technology Center, a nonprofit organization that has a mission of advancing the use of technologies that can better serve the entire community in healthcare.
As the election draws near, factcheck.org's Lori Robertson brings us another misspoken statement from the campaign trail.
Mark, why do I think she might be looking forward to the end of this campaign period? Hard to believe that the election is only a few days away and that it's still too close to call. But here at Conversations on Healthcare, we'll keep right on bringing you the latest in healthcare policy, innovation, and reform. And you can hear all our shows by Googling CHC Radio.
And as always, if you have comments, email us at CHC Radio or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you.
We'll get to our interview with Dr. Molly Coy in just a moment.
But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news. Well, it's down to final days in the presidential election, with Hurricane Sandy causing dozens of cancellations in several key swing states. President Obama returned to Washington Sunday to be on hand for the federal response to the monster storm. And Mitt Romney canceled several appearances that were scheduled in states being impacted by the storm, like Virginia and Ohio. Healthcare has come round again in prominence as an issue in the waning days of the campaign. The Republican National Committee launching an ad campaign in swing states, calling the Affordable Care Act a huge tax increase. Meanwhile, President Obama continues to tout the law's strengths, including coverage for all Americans, tens of millions of whom lack access to basic primary care due to lack of insurance. But how is the message playing out in those key battleground states? States like Florida, which is expected to fall in Mitt Romney's camp, actually has the highest number of uninsured residents. Many of the group still aren't sure about the health care law, according to a recent poll. States like Ohio, Virginia, and Colorado will hold the key to who gets the keys to the Oval Office in January. The race still too close to call. Meanwhile, as a meningitis outbreak continues to claim more victims in the aftermath of the distribution of mold-tainted steroids, word comes out that the Massachusetts pharmaceutical company responsible for the drugs had been cited in the past for violations, but no disciplinary action had been taken. The FDA and CDC are continuing their investigation. The death toll is rising. As 10,000 baby boomers step into their senior years every day, food for thought for the 65-plus crowd. Want to keep your brain from shrinking? Keep moving. Study out in this month's issue of Neurology confirms what aging experts had expected. Those who exercised more in a 3-year study had far less shrinkage in the white matter of the brain. Regular exercise like walking, yoga, weight training had more impact on brain health than mental exercises. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news.
We're speaking today with Dr. Molly Coy, Chief Innovation Officer for the UCLA Health System and Director of the Institute for Innovation in Health at the University of California. Dr. Coy is the founder of Health Technology Center, a nonprofit forecasting organization for emerging technologies in healthcare. She's the former Director of Health Services for the state of California. And Dr. Coy co-authored the groundbreaking reports To Air is Human and Crossing the Quality Chasm. She sits on numerous boards, including the American Telemedicine Association. She's been named as one of the top 100 most influential people in healthcare. Dr. Coy, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you.
You've been at the forefront of promoting innovation in the healthcare system for a couple of decades. And as we all know, healthcare is very slow to adapt to change. And yet there are big changes afoot as we enter the era of the Affordable Care Act. What's your vision of where healthcare should be going? And what do you think the healthcare system of the future should look like?
Well, it's an exciting moment now with health reform, both the pressures in the private sector and the leadership in the governmental sector, really raising the stakes and raising the possibility for us to reorganize the way care is delivered and the way people experience health care. So it's very exciting, and it's important that we have some common shared vision of where we're trying to head in order to reduce some of the noise and the chaos. I would say, in addition to the triple aim, and you've had Dr. Berwick on as your guest before, I know, who really is the father of the triple aim, which is a overall policy statement that we want to improve the health of all the people. We want to have the experience of actual health care delivery very good, and we want it to be affordable. But I like to take it down to the individual patient, the person in the community and their family. What do they want? Because I'm not sure they would express it in those terms. And I think of it as three things. First of all, they want the system that they're getting care from to be trusted. They want to be able to just assume it's high quality and to not have it be fragmented and confusing. Care they have confidence in, where they need it and when they need it. The second thing is they really do need it to be affordable. But in addition to not having cost barriers, they need to make sure that whatever language they speak or whatever culture they live in, that it's not only affordable, but that it's accessible. So that's the second part. And the third part is kind of a hard thing to describe because I personally don't like the word empowering. It sounds like sort of a wonky kind of word. But the word in healthcare is usually to make healthcare satisfying. What's the satisfaction rate for patients? Well, that's very passive. That's sort of, were people nice enough to you that day? And really what we've seen is that very good healthcare can make you feel so good about yourself and your ability to manage your healthcare. So I hope that we will also build a health system that helps people feel good and safe and confident that they're doing what they need to for themselves.
Dr. Coy, you used the word safe there a minute ago, and you were instrumental in writing the groundbreaking Institute of Medicine report along with Dr. Don Berwick to Air is Human. And certainly that was a report that put a glaring spotlight, at least for the healthcare folks, on the American healthcare system and the issues with safety. You've had experience running both public and private health institutions. So when you look at safety, which I think we probably all agree is of all the things you mentioned, the one that consumers would most likely assume was there for them in healthcare, we haven't made all the progress that we want to. What do you see as the two or three key barriers to achieving the kind of safety in healthcare that we'd all like to see?
Well, I think the greatest barrier is the fragmentation of healthcare. I used to run state health departments in two states, and you can regulate forever. You can investigate, you can do all the inspections you want to, but it really isn't a problem of just stamping out bad apples. What you need is this organized system of care so that the doctors, the hospitals, the nurses, and the patients can share information and work together with confidence, knowing what each of them is doing. When you have that, then you have the chance to really have smooth handoffs and not have the big quality problems.
Now, Dr. Coy, before joining UCLA, you were the founder and CEO of Health Technology Center, also known as Health Tech, a nonprofit entity that became the premier forecasting organization for emerging technologies in healthcare. And you've advised numerous healthcare organizations and hospitals. So based on your expertise, what should healthcare systems be doing to achieve significant improvements in the patient experience?
Well, I think that the most important part of it is also the part that's most rewarding and fulfilling, which is basically to help patients move, we say in healthcare, upstream, meaning get the care to them and the support to them before they get really sick. It's a form of prevention. Mm-hmm. And so what that really means is moving the care out of the hospital into, not just into the primary care physician's office or clinics, but actually into the home and the community. And that's very real, very doable. There are health systems that are doing it. At UCLA, for example, many of our patients have a huge number of medications they're balancing. If you've got one or two or three chronic diseases, you might easily have 8 or 9 different medications you're taking. And many patients get confused about that. So we now are training people from the community to visit patients in their home and sit down with them and look at all the medicines they're taking, record them, check remotely, because they can use a tablet computer to check with a pharmacist, and help them straighten out so they actually are taking the meds that they ought to be taking. It's a small example of how much you can do when you move the care out to meet the patients where they need it.
Well, Dr. Coy, that also would seem like a good approach to contributing to the triple aim. And you've said we have to be able to talk about our healthcare systems, not only in terms of how to make care better, but also how to make it less expensive or cheaper, a word we don't always use in healthcare. Beyond what you've just referenced, you've also talked about some specific trends in how we deliver healthcare and healthcare systems that might also bring costs down significantly. One I know you've identified is the spread of the retail clinic model. And a second that you've talked about is the increased use and the expansion of community health centers. And a third is the reliance on telemedicine. Tell us about these transformative trends. How do you see them really bending the cost curve? What's their contribution?
Well, the health centers are really the largest single example of organized primary care in the country. They were initially built sort of out of hardship conditions to try and meet the needs of underserved communities. And what they did along the way was actually build a system of coordinated care that's very effective and does reduce the cost that can result when patients don't get good care, so that patients go to the emergency room or they're hospitalized just because they couldn't get good primary care. But there's another example, I think, of this kind of approach, which is in palliative care. We all know the figures about the enormous amount of the share of the health expenditures that are actually used in the last year of life. And so many hospitals now are starting to have a palliative care team in the hospital. But there's a much better approach to go upstream and actually send teams of social workers and educators and physicians to the home of patients when they're starting to be seriously ill, on the verge of being terminally ill, but before they wind up in the hospital, to go in and meet not just with a patient, but with their family and the caregivers, and have a calm conversation about what they want and which direction they should head. That has actually been shown, and we're very excited about this at UCLA, this has been shown to reduce the total cost of care in the last year of life by a third. So that's a huge impact. And it also makes the experience of the last year so much better for the patients and for their families. So I think that there's a kind of virtuous circle here where what you do to reduce costs actually can improve the patient experience and the clinical outcomes. And if you do it well, what you do to improve the clinical outcomes will reduce costs.
We're speaking today with Dr. Molly Coy, Chief Innovation Officer for the UCLA Health System and Director of the Institute for Innovation in Health at the University of California. Dr. Coy is the founder of Health Technology Center, a nonprofit forecasting organization for emerging technologies in healthcare. I want to pull the thread a little on that concept of prevention and get your thoughts on how systems like UCLA and community health centers will be rewarded for their work in terms of dollars. Has the reimbursement system caught up with all of the changes and transitions that are going on in the healthcare delivery system?
Well, I'm more than hopeful. I'm actually seeing it happen. We, for example, have applied for one of the ACOs, which is sort of the opportunities to work with Medicare patients, giving them full choice of providers, but working with them where we get to understand the pattern of their care and try to get some savings by doing prevention and keeping them out of the hospital. Now, that doesn't always make a lot of sense for the people who run hospitals. And even they really do care about trying to provide better medicine. So their attitude is slowly changing. They're saying, well, if you actually are willing to pay for keeping people healthy, we can reorient the system. Mm-hmm. But it's a heavy lift, you know, and we're not there yet. We've seen the first, I'd say, the first quarter of the pathway, and it's very, very exciting. Because this is really what my background's in public health, and this is what we've been waiting for so long, is to have the reimbursement system really help you stay healthy.
Dr. Coy, along those lines, you've talked about technologies, and obviously you've had a fascinating history with the development of health technologies, and you've said the single defining characteristic of technologies that can be easily moved forward are ones that touch the consumer and change the experience for the consumer, and that these might make a real contribution to better care, better quality, and lower cost. But you've also said that these new devices and applications are just gizmos unless there's a system in place to effectively use them. And how are you at UCLA and in your work looking at how we motivate consumers to begin to take advantage of these and to motivate healthcare providers to recommend them and to take the time to help people figure out which ones might make sense for them?
One of the most convincing things to most consumers and patients is to have their own physician say, you know, for managing your hypertension, you really ought to think about using this tool or this gizmo, and I can work with you on it. Now, that's really hard if it's an individual physician in their office and they have to know everything about all of these new gizmos and run them all themselves. That's pretty hard. But we can see in the Veterans Administration, where 10 years ago they made a decision that they were going to do this kind of support for the veterans who had chronic diseases, that it's been tremendously successful. There are over 200,000 patients that are getting their care in part in their home remotely. And that's very important because a third of the veterans live in fairly remote communities that don't have a lot of access to health care. But that can be a huge convenience even if you live downtown in the middle of a city.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that it wasn't just go to the drugstore and buy your hypertension monitor. Consumers do buy home blood pressure monitors. But what this is have it hooked up so that your doctor gets an alert if all of a sudden your blood pressure is starting to go up, and have a way that a nurse or someone on the health system end can get in touch with you and say, is there something going on? And the patient can say, oh yeah, my family came for a visit last week and we ate way too much sodium, but I'm back on the right path. Just keep watching it and I'll be okay in a couple of days. That's the kind of service relationship you need so that it's not just a gizmo.
Dr. Coy, after running state health institutions and analyzing the healthcare industry on a national level, you're now based at a teaching institution. And so tell us a little more about the Institute for Innovation at UCLA. And I was just thinking about the comment that you made, that it sort of suggested it might be a heavy lift for the healthcare delivery system to be responsive to social media or to be the input that comes back from your cell phone. They're way behind the curve, healthcare is, in adapting technology. So you've got a big challenge ahead of you, and you've got a great perch to do it. You're in a UCLA health system. So tell us about the experience at the Institute about transforming the system for the next generation of health professionals.
Well, it's been tremendously exciting, and there's lots of different meanings for innovation. But what we're using, and I think a lot of people are in the context of health reform, we're using the definition of innovation is really the accelerator. It's a thing that can jumpstart you in trying to make those changes to make healthcare better for patients. So the things that I've mentioned, like palliative care in the home, or being able to communicate with a patient in the home about their chronic diseases like hypertension or asthma or diabetes, and to be able to get that information and track it. All of those systems actually exist out there. They're available. What's changing now is the interest of places like the UCLA Health System and lots of provider systems in how do we put these all together so that it's not a big hassle for the patient. We need to be able to support the patient so these things are easier than using your toaster to use the technologies. And I think that process is working. It's very exciting, and we have some leaders like the Veterans Administration to look at, but we have a wireless health institute here that's affiliated with our institute, and they've come up with a terrific approach for rehabilitation that tremendously increases the speed of recovery for patients after a stroke, simply because they get their own feedback by wearing a little monitor strapped to their ankle, and they can tell how they're doing. And for the first time, they don't have to wait for the doctor to tell them. They actually know themselves. So there's quite a lot out there, and the job of innovation is to sort through it and find the accelerators that really will make a difference.
Well, Dr. Coy, we'll remember that phrase, as easy as your toaster, when we think about healthcare technologies going forward. We've been speaking today with Dr. Molly Coy, Chief Innovation Officer for the UCLA Health System and Director of the Institute for Innovation and Health at UCLA. Dr. Coy is the founder of the Health Technology Center and on the boards of the American Telemedicine Association and the Aetna Foundation. And you can find out more about Dr. Coy's work by going to UCLA's Institute for Innovation and Health website. Dr. Coy, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you.
Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, Illinois Republican Representative Joe Walsh made some controversial comments on abortion recently. He claimed that with, quote, modern technology and science, there wasn't one instance where abortion would be necessary to save the mother's life. But the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists said that more than 600 women die each year due to complications from pregnancy and childbirth, and more would die if they didn't have access to abortion. Now, Walsh has since backed down from these comments, saying that he does support medical procedures during pregnancy that might result in the loss of an unborn child. He's running for re-election against Democrat Tammy Duckworth. So what types of conditions might threaten a mother's life during pregnancy? Well, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that about 1,300 pregnancy-related deaths had occurred in 2006-2007. Those are the most recent statistics available. And these were deaths within a year of pregnancy. The causes were really numerous. They included cardiovascular disease, hemorrhage, hypertension, infections, and embolisms. 5.6% of these women died from unknown causes. There are also ectopic pregnancies, where the fetus develops outside the uterus. Those affect about 64,000 women a year. And the National Institute for Health says that ectopic pregnancies are life-threatening and the pregnancy can't continue to birth. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. We've all heard that the senior population is the fastest growing group of users of the internet, and that's great news. But the Pew Internet and American Life Project estimate that only 53% of Americans over 65 use the internet, and that number drops sharply after age 75. A number of organizations hope to close that gap. Government agencies like the Institute on Aging, the National Institute of Libraries of Medicine, and AARP are spearheading programs aimed at training seniors to navigate computers and surf the web. A nonprofit organization in New York City has a particularly unique approach. Older Adult Technology Services, or OATS, offers free computer labs for seniors in English and Spanish to help them become comfortable navigating the web, and there's an added benefit. The program matches teenagers with the seniors in an intergenerational media literacy program. The seniors learn the basics of web surfing, gaining access to online information related to their health, and they connect with their teenage teachers in a meaningful way that often lasts long past the run of the course. As more health services are available online, the world of e-health is opened up for these participants, who then have more tools to manage whatever chronic diseases or health problems they're dealing with. A program that facilitates access to health services on the web for seniors who've previously been out of the electronic loop. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.